Hey everybody, welcome to The Blind Spot. I'm your host, Jason Pulaski, and this is the latest episode of my show. It's been a little while. I plead indolence and laziness, a bad home environment, disorganization, procrastination, and one or two other excuses that I've forgotten. But, you know, the fact that I have to pay $15 a month in hosting fees, and the other fact that I really want to get into a good habit of doing a podcast has me back. So here we are. And perfectionism is the excuse I forgot. I've tried to record this episode four times and deleted it four times, which has sucked. And it only gets harder. So this time is going to be the time, you know. The thing I want to talk about is the war Israel is fighting with Hamas in the Gaza Strip, because it's such a hot topic. Most people who follow the news, and some who, you know, half follow it, have opinions on this topic, and it's pretty controversial. And the thing about it is that, like, a lot of people who have opinions are in places where, one way or the other, like, the outcome of the conflict is not going to affect them. Like, here in the United States, for example, it's like, you know, Hamas could take over the entire Middle East and decide from the oil price we wouldn't be affected. Not that that would happen. That's actually a bad example because we would be hugely affected. But the point is, like, in general, I mean, but that's not going to happen. The point is that, like, you know, like, most of the probable ways the conflict could go won't affect people outside of it. But a lot of people have very strong feelings on both sides. And, you know, I find my feelings to be pretty strong, and I also find, like, other people's feelings on the topic confusing. And so, you know, I wanted to give my own opinion because I do, and talk a little bit about other people's opinions. So, you know, I guess, like, to put it pretty simply, like, I basically stand with Israel in this situation because I like the Jews. I mean, you know, the way I look at this is like, you know, in World War II, they were almost wiped out because Hitler, like, you know, implemented a Holocaust. The Germans, you know, then almost killed all of them. They killed, like, about 6 million Jews, you know. And the Jews who survived went to Israel. Like, there was already a little Jewish colony in what's now modern-day Israel. And, like, what was at the time the British Mandate of Palestine. But after World War II, like, the surviving Jews sort of flocked to Israel, except for American Jews, mostly. And, like, you know, you can't really blame the Jews who went to Israel because they'd almost been wiped out. It was a huge thing at the time that, during World War II, when the Holocaust was happening, the Jews didn't have anywhere to go. People wouldn't let them into their countries, you know. Like, they got turned away. I mean, like, in the middle of the Holocaust, they were being turned away. And, like, when they were trying to run from Germany and, like, Europe, they were being turned away from other places, you know. It was unwelcoming. They were unwelcomed, you know. And so, I mean, I find it, like, an easy argument. I find it, like, an obvious argument that the Jews should have their own place. Like, you know, so that if there was ever another Holocaust, they have a place. They have their own people they can go to for protection. Now, you know, I know it sounds a little weird because if you're an American, for example, and, like, or if you're a country a lot like America, you know, it's easy to think that, like, oh, it's weird that like, Israel is basically a religious ethno-state, or because Jews are, like, both a religion and an ethnicity. And, like, we don't really do that here. We don't play that way here. We are. You can become an American as long as you subscribe to our ideology of, like, you know, freedom and democracy and such. But, you know, other places aren't like us. That's the point. And so I think that, like, the Jews having a Jewish state, like, makes a lot of sense to me. And, like, you know, the Jews built themselves a democracy, which is the best form of government that we know of to exist so far. And so, like, but because it's a democracy, for the Jewish state to be a Jewish state and not a state where Jews live, the Jews need to maintain a voting majority in the state, and a sizable one as well. Otherwise, they wouldn't have control of their own state. So, like, that all makes sense to me. I have no problem with any of that. It's like, it's a weird thing sometimes where people people hear the word democracy and then they then suppose that because a country is a democracy, it has to do certain things. So, I mean, just to keep it, like, narrow, people might think, well, if a country is a democracy, it has to let immigrants into its country, or it has to let everybody who lives in the land the country controls vote. You know, so people call Israel an apartheid state, as an example, because it doesn't allow the Palestinians on the land that it occupies to vote. You know, but, like, Israel isn't an apartheid state because, like, the Palestinians aren't citizens of Israel. They're just there. They just live on land Israel owns. That's all. So, you know, and there's no reason. I mean, like, you know, every democracy is different. Democracy is just the will of the people, you know, converted into a government, the will of the majority with some checks on it. That's all. So, you know, that's the context. So, you know, Hamas attacked Israel 6 months ago. Hamas is the government in the Gaza Strip. The Gaza Strip is, just go look at a fucking map. I'm tired. The Gaza Strip is a little place that Israel won from Egypt in a war. Later, Israel tried to give it back to Egypt, but Egypt didn't want it. So now Israel, like, doesn't really own it, but it sort of quarantines the borders and is currently occupying part of it because of the war that happened. So what happened was 6 months ago, Hamas, the government of Gaza, launched a kind of raid into Israel where they killed 1,200 civilians and took about 200 hostages back into the Gaza Strip. And in response, Israel declared war on Hamas with the goal of eliminating it as an organization, which makes perfect sense to me. Any nation attacked in that way would declare war on the nation or organization that attacked it. You know, the example I always use is like if a Mexican cartel launched a raid out of Mexico into the United States, killed 1,200 civilians and took 200 hostages, you know, we in the United States would obliterate that Mexican cartel. And we would do it with or without the permission of the Mexican government, and we would be so pissed off that, like, you know, because we are the most moral superpower or the least immoral superpower that has ever existed, we would try as hard as we could. Well, no, we would try not to totally wipe out civilians, but our major goal would be destroying that cartel. And some civilians would die when we did it. And we would do it anyway. And every other country I know of would do the exact same thing in the exact same circumstance. Like, when I bring up the Mexican cartel example, I have friends who are like, but Jay, you know, the Mexicans aren't treated as badly as the Palestinians are by the Israelis. And it's like, you know, that's sort of true. Except that, like, we took half of Mexico 150 years ago. That's why they're half the size they used to be. We took a bunch of their land in a war. So, you know, Mexico has a grievance like any, you know, I mean, there's a moral grievance there. We took half their fucking country. The only thing that's changed about that is time, you know. And I never knew that like, you know, time made an immoral thing moral over time, you know. So the thing about it is like, but if you don't like that example, here's a different one. Imagine some American Indian tribe off of one of the reservations we've granted them, you know, comes out of their reservation and takes 200 hostages and kills 1,200 innocent civilians. And, you know, what would happen then is the same thing. The United States government would legally dissolve that reservation, go onto our land, and then remove, save the hostages and, like, kill everybody responsible. because that's a threat to national security. You know, we'd dismantle that tribe and just fuck it. You know, that's what we would do. We would do whatever we had to make sure it didn't happen again. And like, that's what any other nation would do. And so like, that's what I look at when I look at Israel and Hamas and Gaza and stuff, and what's happened. I don't see anything remarkable about what Israel did in response to what Hamas did. Israel was attacked and declared war on the people who attacked it and are prosecuting that war with the vigor I would expect from any civilized, dignified nation, any competent nation. I know of no nation that would not do the exact same thing, except for nations like Haiti, which would be incapable of doing so. So like, that for me is the starting point of this discussion. That's the starting point. So now, in any war, civilian casualties are inevitable. I read a lot of history. It's a hobby of mine. You know, it seems to me in most wars, the people who suffer most are the civilians. They're killed, their property is destroyed, they're displaced, like they're ethnically cleansed, yada, yada, yada. It's a bad time. I mean, like, war is hell and war is most hell, on the most hellish for the civilians, you know. You know, and urban warfare is particularly bad for civilians, and given the nature of the Gaza Strip, which is like, I think, 5 or 6 miles wide and like 40 miles long, maybe it's 9 miles wide. I really want to get it right, so I'm going to say 9 miles wide and 40 miles long. God damn, I wish I could look it up. But anyway, the Gaza Strip's a narrow little bit of land, so, and it has a couple of different cities in it, so it's urban warfare mostly. Urban warfare has high civilian casualties, and so this is an urban war. Therefore, like, the civilian casualties are high. Also, you know, Hamas is not a I might regret this phrasing later, but Hamas is not a civilized actor. They're a terrorist organization, so they break the laws of war. They don't wear military uniforms. They deliberately hide themselves among and within the civilian population. They set up their military headquarters and supply depots, including weapons, obviously, under schools and under and in mosques and under and in hospitals and in civilian houses and apartments, you know, because they deliberately use civilians as human shields. As far as Hamas is concerned, dead Palestinians are good for the cause because they make people in the West more sympathetic to the Palestinians. You know, so the more bodies that pile up, of women and children, like, the more Hamas can, you know, tout, like, whatever the fuck it is they're touting. You know, it's like a, hey, look at all these dead people kind of thing. So for Hamas, dead civilians is a plus, not a minus. And so they do things to encourage that to happen, both because it protects their fighters from Israeli harm, because they're camouflaged within civilian populations and infrastructure, but also when Israel then has to attack Hamas and hit civilians, Hamas can trumpet dead civilians as kind of a woe is us type of thing, you know. So the thing is, like, given all of that, I civilian casualties are to be expected, and relatively high civilian casualties are to be expected as well, and you know. I have a couple friends who were in the military, the American military, and one of the things they say to me is that they believe that, you know, Israel isn't trying very hard to, you know, prevent civilian casualties. Like, first of all, that seems like an assertion difficult to prove. Like, one point is that, like, one person said to me that, like, well, Israel is using a lot of normal bombs, just like we'd call them dumb bombs, I guess, compared to smart bombs, meaning, like, it's a big fucking bomb. You throw it out the door of a plane or probably a technical term, but, like, you know, you have a bomber plane meant to drop bombs. You have a big bomb in the fucking plane. You fly over an area and drop a bomb, as opposed to, like, shooting out a missile that, like, goes and blows up a specific BMW, you know? It's a guided missile or whatever. So, you know, that's a very poor explanation, but it's close enough. So, like, the thing is, you know, hey, like, not everybody has the fucking money we have. like where we're throwing smart bombs around, you know, but all our like this person was comparing what Israel does to what America does. The thing is, though, like America is in a luxurious position. Every war we launched in the last 24 years, every military operation, except for maybe a couple of them, I'm talking about the invasion of Afghanistan after 9/11 specifically, has been a war of choice. Like, we choose to go fuck around far, far from home, which gives us the luxury of planning and the further luxury of knowing the blowback, if we leave, is probably not going to happen. It's not like if we leave Iraq, we're going to have to fucking fight the Iraqi army in Texas, you know. Like, those guys can hardly manage to jerk off properly, like, let alone get an army out of their own country. So, like, that war was optional. So, during that war, there was a city called Mosul, and it had been reconquered after we'd conquered it by, Islamic terror groups, basically. And we wanted to take the city back because we wanted to, project military power across the whole country so we could try and reform it into a democracy and so we could kill terrorists and stuff. And we did take it back. But we spent 9 months planning the operation to take it back. And one of the reasons we spent 9 months doing that was because we wanted to minimize civilian casualties, which is a laudable goal, when it doesn't conflict with a military necessity or like an existential war for your own existence as a nation. And like the Iraq war was none of that. Like, you know, it was not about our continued existence as a nation. Iraq is thousands of miles from our country. No disrespect to anybody who served in that war, but the stakes were low. It wasn't like if it went badly in Iraq for us, there'd be major blowback at home. We don't need to occupy Iraq to prevent it being used as a terrorist launch pad. You know, we haven't been there for 13 years now in force, I mean. So the point is, like, that war was an optional war, which gave us the luxury of spending 9 months to plan out an operation to retake a city. The war that Israel is fighting is not that type of war. Israel's fighting to protect its own national security, and it's fighting enemies that are right there. Those enemies are like 2 miles away from Israel's territory. They don't have the luxury of waiting 9 months to plan out a war to minimize civilian casualties. I wouldn't expect that they would do that. And I wouldn't expect that if we were attacked by Mexico, we would do it as persnicketily as we did in Iraq. Because we wouldn't feel like we had the time. We'd feel pressed, you know. The home front would be howling for success and blood. Not civilian blood necessarily, but like, you know, if we were attacked by Mexico or, you know, an American Indian tribe, we would insist that that war be prosecuted immediately and with all the vigor we could prosecute it with. The American public would not stand for a 9-month planning period to lower civilian casualties. No way, no how. So I don't hold Israel to a lower standard than I hold us to, as far as that goes. I bring this up because a lot of people are mad at the number of civilian casualties that have happened. Last time I looked, it was about 34,000 people had been killed in the Gaza Strip by Israel ever since the war started, like in the middle of October of last year. Israel says it's killed maybe 10 to 15,000 Hamas fighters. So that means the ratio of civilians to military deaths is maybe 1-to-1 or 2-to-1, depending on what number turns out to be right. And, like, I don't know what an acceptable ratio is, but, I mean, close enough. Like, you know, I mean, that's not even my call, I guess, is how I look at this. It's like, look, like, I give a lot of consideration and wiggle room to a country that's been attacked to decide what rate of civilian casualties are acceptable to it as it performs operations to see that it won't be attacked in the same way again. I I fail to see, like, how else you would look at it. That's the thing. The thing that confuses me is, like, there are people who are really pissed about Israel fucking up Gaza. They're mad at all the buildings that have gotten bombed. They're mad that the children and the women are dead at Israel's hand. They're mad about, like, food shortages and, like, all sorts of other shit. And it's like, yo, this is a war. What did you think a war was? You know, I mean, in World War I, Britain blockaded Germany and tried to starve them out. You know, I mean, blockades were used in World War II as well, like, to starve people. I mean, I've read about a lot of wars, and this war doesn't seem any different, really. I don't see anything new under the sun here, except more of it's on video, which might make a difference, you know. What was our civilian to military ratio in Vietnam? I don't know. Or Iraq? I don't know. But, like, Israel's war seems in line with what I know about war. And, like, there are people who vehemently oppose it. Some of them are my friends, too. Some of them, sorry, I feel like I'm talking with a muddy mouth. Some of the people who I know who vehemently oppose that war are friends of mine. Which makes me want to understand where they're coming from. And I really, I guess I do. I mean, like, you know, you can show people pictures of dead kids and that'll be upsetting. It's like Israel's killed at least 5,000 children since this war started. And I don't mean child soldiers because they don't count. They're military fighters. You know, I don't care if a soldier is 16 or 17 or 12, you know. If they have a gun and they're trying to, you know, prosecute a war. I mean, if anybody fighting, anybody who is a combatant is by definition not a civilian, whether they be, you know, man, woman, or child. But like, assuming that that is not the case, and we're just talking about non-combatants who are not materially supporting Hamas with aid or comfort, then Israel has still killed a lot of people. You know, a lot of children, a lot of women and men too, you know, who are not involved, so to speak. I mean, as uninvolved as you can be in the Gaza Strip as a Palestinian, which admittedly is fairly uninvolved. You know, I mean, to be clear, in case you don't know, I hope this isn't unprofessional. I'm grabbing a Coke from a fridge. I don't really know the etiquette. But anyway, I don't know if you know, but the Gaza Strip is bordered by two countries, Egypt and Israel. Israel doesn't want to let too many Palestinians into Israel through the Gaza Strip, and so it blockades its own borders with the Gaza Strip. I mean, it blockades its own border with the Gaza Strip, so Palestinians can't leave that way. It also blocks off exit by sea. Now, Egypt also doesn't want the Palestinians because whenever they get let out in numbers, they cause trouble. You can look at Jordan for, you know, how. Black September, like in Lebanon also, you know. So, the Palestinians are an unwanted people. So, like, they can't get visas to leave. So, they can't go fly out of the Gaza Strip because to leave the Gaza Strip by plane for some other country, you need a visa out. You can't just hop on a plane and leave. You need a visa. And countries don't give the Palestinians visas. So the Gaza Strip isn't technically an open-air prison because some people can leave. Like, you know, Bob Smith of the Gaza Strip is granted a visa to travel to France by France. He can get on a plane and go to France. But the thing is, you know, that usually doesn't happen. So in many ways, the Gaza Strip is de facto a open-air prison. It would be horrible to be born there. You probably couldn't leave. You know, and the people of Gaza have done nothing to create themselves any type of good society. So the job prospects suck and the economy sucks. So you're basically relying on foreign aid and, like, you know, there's chronic unemployment. I mean, the unemployment rate in the Gaza Strip is 48% with female employment, by the way, being 14%, so it's one of those countries, too, where women don't work. Sorry, I said country, I just meant fucking area. Because it's not a country. But anyway, so the point here
is that, like, it's easy to be an uninvolved civilian, and you're just stuck. You were born in the Gaza Strip. You know, it's like the opposite of being born an American. You, like, got the shit end of the birth lottery and where you were born. And now there's a war, and you're fucking stuck there. So plenty of those people have died. But this is, like, the problem is, like, you know, this is why it's a bad idea to elect a government of terrorists who made their intentions pretty clear in how they would prosecute their conflict with Israel. Now, the thing about it is that in 2007 or 2008, there was a free and fair election in the Gaza Strip, and the Gazans elected Hamas as their government. After Hamas was given power in an election, they attempted a coup d'etat in the form of fighting a civil war with, you know, other organizations that wanted to govern the Gaza Strip, and Hamas won that civil war and then refused to hold any more elections since then, which is typical, you know. But the thing is, like, the Palestinians also did not depose Hamas since that happened. They have allowed them to remain their government. Now, when I bring this up, you know, people go, but if the Palestinians opposed Hamas and tried to depose it, some of them would be killed. And like, yep, that's true. But as you can see, some of them are being killed right now. So the question is, like, if the Palestinian people had risen up in Gaza to depose their government, would Hamas have killed 20,000 people? Because that's how many people Israel has killed who are not Hamas fighters, because Hamas declared war on Israel by launching a raid into Israel and killing 1,200 people and taking hostages. Ah, good Coke. So that's the issue. You know, people are responsible for the actions of their governments. That's how international relations work. You know, if Joe Biden finally lost his marbles today and had a psychotic break and launched like 18 nuclear weapons at South Korea, and the world, rightly outraged, launched a war to invade the United States to prevent us from doing that again, when they launched that war and began to fight our people, they wouldn't say to each person they were about to shoot, hey, excuse me, sir or madam, did you vote for Joe Biden in the last presidential election? They wouldn't do that because they would just hold everybody here responsible for what happened. And rightly so. And you can make the argument that people who are governed by non-democratic governments are less responsible than people governed by democratic governments, but that doesn't mean they are not responsible. The Germans, for example, are responsible for everything Hitler did, etc. You know, and that holds true for the people of Gaza. Tough shit. It's a cold world. What did you think it was? So I think about my friends who don't agree with me on this, and I think they keep looking at dead children. And they don't like it, you know. And I understand that. Nobody likes dead kids. But war sucks. I mean, all war sucks. I don't know of any war that doesn't suck and doesn't produce dead civilians and dead children, you know. The question you got to ask is, like, is the war worth fighting? You know, if there's going to be a war, you don't say, well, civilians are going to die, so this shouldn't happen. You say, okay, there could be a war for this reason. Here's how I'll put it. Okay. Imagine that China decides it's going to invade Taiwan. And just to make this example make sense, it says, it's Tuesday, we're going to invade on Friday. It just tells the world, stay out, you know, this is our business. Now, the United States has said that it will go to war with China if China invades Taiwan. But if the U.S. goes to war with China, civilians will die. It's a guarantee. You can bet your life on it. Now, knowing civilians will die would not be a reason for us to say, like, well, we're not going to go to war to save Taiwan because there will be dead civilians, so we won't do it. The way you should do it, in my opinion, is go, okay, is it or is it not worth going to war to attempt to save Taiwan from a Chinese invasion? And if the answer is it's worth it, you go to war, knowing civilians will die, because civilians always die in war. So the way I look at it is, like, Israel got attacked by Hamas. No country worth its salt would do nothing after being attacked in such a way. It's that your first duty as a government of a nation is to ensure you're never hit that way again. So you go to war. It's clearly worth it. It's clearly worth it for Israel to do that. And civilians are going to die. Even though civilians are going to die, it's still clearly worth it. And, like, you know, the Palestinians brought this war upon themselves by attacking Israel in the way they did. If the people of the Gaza Strip didn't want that to happen, they should have deposed the government of Hamas. They should have done it years ago. They could have done it 5 months ago. They could have done it in November, you know. They could have done it on October 8th, but they didn't. And the thing is, like, listen, you know, people depose governments all the time. There were 7 or 8, you know, revolutions just in the Arab world 12, 13 years ago. They called it the Arab Spring. So you don't tell me that people can't depose their governments. It's done all the time. And all those governments, by the way, were authoritarians. They weren't like, you know, dick-sucking hippies singing kumbaya. They were like a bunch of, they had no problem shooting people, and they were still deposed. So people depose violent authoritarian governments, you know, yearly. It can be done. Okay, yearly is a little strong, but at least, you know, it's there's a long list there's a long list of situations where exactly that has happened. So it's not an undoable thing. It was just a thing that wasn't done. So the other thing is, I like the nation Israel has built itself. Israel is a liberal Western-style democracy in a region where it is the only country like that. Iraq is a kind of democracy. It might strengthen into a real democracy over time, but so far that's unknown. Israel is an anomaly and an outlier in the Middle East. It, you know, has human rights. There's gay rights in Israel, women's rights in Israel. It's an economic powerhouse for its size. You know, it wins Nobel Prizes. It has a robust free press. You know, it is basically a Western transplanted country. It might as well be in Western Europe or you know, next to Canada. It's like Japan or South Korea or Taiwan. You know? Or Australia. You know, it's the other reason I support Israel in this situation. Palestinians seem to me to be, you know, a standard Muslim situation here. There's no democracy. There's no free press. There aren't a lot of women's rights. There doesn't seem to be a lot of respect for minority rights or gay rights, you know? I don't see a lot of, hewing to the Declaration of Universal Human Rights. I see, like, you know, like a little Iran, basically, you know. It's never a good sign when the female unemployment rate's 14%. You know, there's a guy who works for the New York Times named Tom Friedman. And he describes the Israel-Palestine conflict as a combination of war and timeout. So it's war, timeout, war, timeout, war, timeout. And Mr. Friedman says that the difference between Israel and Palestine is what Israel has done during the timeouts, what Palestine has done during the timeouts, and I tend to completely agree with him. During the times where there has not been war, Israel has built a robust, you know, nation that anybody should admire. It's strong and stable. It's been a democracy since 1948. That's long enough that you can assume that's now stable. Some of these new democracies can easily just be gone up in smoke in a coup, you know, when they're 20 years old. But once a democracy 70 or 80, it has some staying power. So Israel's done that. And like that makes me admire the country. You know, I'd feel much differently, I think, if the Gaza Strip was a little mini Switzerland and Israel was invading it, but it isn't. Those people have not, in the Gaza Strip, have not, like, given themselves any admirable form of government. They've created no industry worth a damn. Like, they're not doing anything. What are they doing? They've just been sitting there for 50 years, trying to fuck up Israel and failing. For 50 years, they've attempted to get themselves a country, and they've been unable to do it. And they've been given opportunities for a country starting in 1947, which they rejected. And like, the hell's the word I want here? You know, what's important here are outcomes. So if you have no country as a people, your primary job is to get one. And they haven't done that. And they've been offered, and they rejected offers, and they still have not gotten one. So it's like, you know, if you're a group of people, if it's your job to get your people a country, and somebody makes you an offer like, hey, here is a potential country for you, and you say, fuck you, that's too small, or fuck you, there's no warm water port, or like, fuck you, whatever, you know, we reject your offer. Okay, well, you better hope you get a better offer or another offer because you just rejected an offer for a country. Those don't come around every day, and nobody is obligated to keep giving you new offers. So that also bothers me. It's like the Palestinians had one job and they haven't done it. Not only have they not done it, but they seem incapable of governing themselves. You know, people keep telling me, oh, a two-state solution, a two-state solution, a two-state solution. Like, okay, listen, I'm not opposed to a two-state solution. We need some type of solution, you know, and Israel ruling over these people forever probably isn't a good solution. It's a bad one. But okay, if you want a two-state solution, show me these people are capable of self-government. What I see is an ungoverned West Bank and a dictatorship in the Gaza Strip. So that doesn't inspire confidence. Right now in the United States and in Europe, people keep asking what's going to happen when Israel leaves the Gaza Strip. And the U.S. and Europe keep trying to create governments for the Palestinians. And I keep thinking, like, this is not our deal. This is not our problem. It's not our problem to create government for the people of the Gaza Strip. We don't have to sit there and give them a constitution we don't have to fucking create a government in exile and then move it back into Gaza. That's the job of the people who live in Gaza, is to meet amongst themselves and create themselves a government. And if they are incapable of doing that, I am very skeptical they'll be able to run a country themselves. You know, back in 1787, when we were, like, running into our own governmental issues in the United States, nobody came to our country from some other country and said, we shall sit down with you and midwife you a government. We did that ourselves. And, that's the obligation of a people to themselves. And if they can't meet it, then I'm very skeptical they can do anything else right going forward. I have no confidence that a government imposed from the outside will last in Gaza. I expect that if the Gaza Strip was made into the Palestinian state, it would be a little mini Islamic dictatorship within 2 years. And that might be fine. Apparently it works for most other Muslim-majority countries. So why not this one? But I just don't see the need to expend any United States political capital to see that happen, because it's creating a non-democracy. Why would I want that? And I'm weakening Israel on top of that. Why? Why? I don't see why. Because the way I look at this is, I think that Before I get too distracted, I just want to say that, like, even though I find the Palestinians inept as a people, as compared to the Jews, that doesn't justify civilian casualties. I was just thinking that maybe it sounded like that's what I was saying. It's not. So anyway, the thing is, I think that what's going on in the world right now is a new Cold War. I think the division line on that new Cold War is between free states and unfree states. So it's basically, to oversimplify a little bit, the United States as the leader of a bloc, and China as the leader of another bloc, and birds of a feather shall flock together, and most of the democracies will ally themselves with us, and we'll have several dictator allies as well, who, you know, historically have been our allies, and you know, everybody else will be on the Chinese side with a couple of neutrals, and then it'll be a long protracted Cold War to see whether the world is ruled by democracies or ruled by dictatorships. And whichever side wins will impose its form of government on the rest of the world. And, you know, because I believe that to be true, and because I believe democracy is better for humanity in general, it's better for human rights, it's better for human happiness and satisfaction, you know, I support democracies over dictatorships. And so anytime that you can put another democracy on the board being the world map of nations, it's a good thing. And Israel is a democracy, and the Gaza Strip is not, so I support Israel. Like in any war it's in. I don't see why I would weaken Israel and create a dictatorship in Palestine. Using American political capital to do it, why? You know, and like, and the other thing is here that, I think about what it would be like to be a Palestinian in Gaza or in the West Bank. And I think that if you were born recently and you look back on the history from, say, 1950 to now, it's easy for you to say, fuck peace. Peace has gotten us nothing, even though there were several offers made, you know, by Israel and by the international community to give the Palestinians a nation. That doesn't really matter. Just because offers were made and rejected doesn't change how people feel. Facts don't always change feelings. And if you are a person living in the Gaza Strip, the fact that offers were made and rejected is not material to how you feel, because you still don't have a country. So people in the Gaza Strip and people in the West Bank who are Palestinian can easily say, peace did not get us a nation. And not only has peace not gotten us a nation, the longer we have been mostly peaceful, the weaker our hand has been. From 1950 until 2024, the hand of cards we hold has simply been getting weaker and weaker, and the odds of our getting a nation of our own have become less and less likely. This is, by the way, a thing I believe to be true as well. That the odds of the Palestinians getting a nation have lessened every decade since 1950. So, as a Palestinian, it would be easy to say, like, peace has gotten us nowhere, and so I reject peace as a solution. I believe in violent resistance to Israeli occupation. And by the way, I think if you're a Palestinian, that's a totally reasonable position to take. It isn't the only position you could take, but I believe it's a reasonable position for you to take. So the thing is, like, you know, if you take that position, you know, and you look at Israel as an occupying, colonizing power, which an argument can be made that it is, you know, violence is justifiable to get you what you want. The ends justify the means, after all. So if that's the argument, which is a reasonable argument, I don't agree with it, but it's reasonable, you know, it justifies attacking Israel in almost any way they can. Like, it justifies October 7th. I understand that. But here's the key. If that's the argument that's put into practice, and it justifies October 7th, well, like, you live in the real world. So once you use violence as a solution to get what you want, it allows the other side to use violence too. So Hamas does an October 7th, and then Israel responds with its declaration of war and a mission to eradicate Hamas off the face of the earth, and now we are where we are. So the problem is, like, you know, if you're a 3.5-foot-tall midget and you kick an 8-foot-tall Ultimate Fighting Championship fighter who is on steroids in the nuts, you know, once he straightens up from that groin kick, he's going to kick the shit out of you. And, like, you know, moral considerations no longer apply once you kick that guy in the balls. You've just started some shit now. And the thing is, like, you still don't have a country. I know I'm mixing my metaphors. But, you know, I don't think the Palestinians are strong enough to use violence to get what they want. And I don't think peace is going to get them what they want either, you know, because Israel is settling the West Bank. You know, because that's what happens when a strong nation is next to a weak collection of people. And I don't mean weak in any other sense than the ability to use military, diplomatic, political, economic, or cultural force to get what you want in this world, which the Palestinians, like, clearly cannot do. That's what I mean. I don't mean they're bad people or anything like that. Of course they're not, as individuals. You know, so that's the problem. Like, that's the issue. It's like, you know, I don't have any solution for what happens when a group of people seems to be outclassed by another group of people who are very close to them physically. Like, Israel is going to settle the West Bank because the only thing that's not being, like, made any more of is land. And Israel wants more land, and they're going to take it. And nobody gives enough of a fuck to go to war on behalf of the Palestinians to prevent that from happening. Because the United States is a strong ally of Israel's, but I don't see why we wouldn't be. That's the thing. It's like, the Palestinians don't have anything to offer us. How can they offer us anything? They don't even have their own country. They can't even get that for themselves. It's like, you know, who wants an ally who only has a begging bowl? And I don't know what the alternative opinion is to mine. I don't understand, like, what you want it to happen or what you think should happen or why you think it should happen. You know, and the other thing is, like, none of this is happening in isolation. You know, Israel hates Iran, and so do we. Israel's a strong check against the Iranians, and that's one of the reasons we're so allied with them. The Iranians fund terrorism all across the Arab world. The Iranians, you know, are helping Russia with its war against Ukraine by supplying drones. Like, the Chinese, the North Koreans, the Iranians, and the Russians are moving closer together into a kind of, like, pact of evil or whatever you want to call it. It's part of that new Cold War I was just talking about. And that also matters. So it's like, you know, if you as a Westerner would like the American president to stand up and give Israel a set down and tell it it's being a piece of shit, well, you know what? What that says to Iran is, hey, America doesn't stand by its allies. And that's not what I want. That's not the message we should send to the world. You know, we should show our allies that we're steadfast, because soon shit's going to get bad and they need to know that they can count on us. And the presidency of Mr. Trump over 4 years, from 2016 to 2020, made people doubt our commitments. And we need to allay those doubts. And one way to do that is to stand with Israel, you know. And it's not even the only reason, it's just one of them. So it's like, this is the problem, is like, you know, Iran doesn't promote any values we want to promote. Like, they're like a little Islamic state. They're like the Islamic state. They don't let women show their hair in public. Like, and they just had huge protests because a woman dared to show her hair in public, and they beat her to death in a street. And there were protests, and so the Iranians shot people until the protests stopped. And, like, you know, it's like, it's the type of government that I think the Palestinians will eventually default to if they ever get a state. You know, and that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at. Like, I don't. So it's like, you know, I guess, I look around and I think to myself, like, okay, I think the people who disagree with me on this Israel-Palestine thing look around and they see videos of, like, you know, a missile hitting a building and people, like, digging other people out with their hands and, like, dead children and shit. And they feel really bad that that is what they're looking at. And they then think about that Israel, like, the Jews didn't live in Palestine for a long time and came back to where they used to live and colonized it, which is true. And, you know, displaced people off their land, which is true. But it's like, yes, this is true. But, like, this is how nations are built. Like, you know, when I look at the history of the entire world and how nations rise from nothing, Israel fits neatly into that history. It's like, how do you think the United States or Great Britain or Canada or France or Germany or Korea or India or name any nation you want that exists. You know, most of these nations arose through blood and conflict and dirt, you know. I don't know one nation that has clean hands. You know, it's like a dog-eat-dog world. It's a sink-or-swim world, you know. The nation of France gets to stay in existence because it has the ability to hold the land it owns. If it didn't have that ability, it wouldn't be France anymore. It's like, look, right now, the Western world is supporting the nation of Ukraine against an attempted Russian invasion. The reason we're doing that is because if Ukraine loses that war and is completely conquered by Russia, here's what will happen. The West will stand up and say, we do not recognize Russia's illegal annexation of Ukraine. Slava Ukraini, you know. And then 5 years later, they'll say, it's been 5 years since Russia's illegal annexation of Ukraine. We still do not recognize Russia's conquest of its neighbor, you know. Ukraine, live on, la 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 la. But a funny thing will start to happen as time goes on, you know. At some point, people are going to start to think of the former Ukraine as Russian territory. And as more time goes on, more people will start to think of Ukraine as Russian. Until eventually everybody thinks of Ukraine, the former Ukraine, as just simply part of Russia. And then the history books will just casually note that, you know, part of Russia used to be a country called Ukraine. That's nothing new. That's how it's always worked. And it's how it still works now. And, So Israel fits right into that. It's like Israel exists and you know, like, it's some people got displaced in its creation and, like, you know, some more people might get displaced, as, like, the Israel's borders kind of settle and move around and stuff. And, like, you know, that's nothing new, though. That's how everything has always worked. I'm, like, saying it shouldn't work that way. Oh, it shouldn't work that way. It's not fair. It's like, yes, it's not fair. Whoever told you the world was fair? It's not. You know, it's heavily unfair. Like, you know, why do you think we in the United States spend $800 billion on the military? You think it's for our looks? No, it's not.
It's because, you know, we want to make sure that we don't get conquered. We want people to listen to us when we talk. You know, like, that's just like how it is. I mean, I don't understand how other people think it should be. It's like that's just what's going on. I mean, you could not like it, like, but so what? It's how it is. And like, I suppose it's changing a little. It's not exactly how it was in the 14th century or something. But like, the underlying principles are the same. And that's that, I guess. You know, like a week ago I ran Attacked Israel. And failed because, you know, the Arab nations that don't like Iran and the United States helped Israel fend off this Iranian attack. And, like, that's the other part of this. It's like, you know, a war with Iran is always a possibility, and the Iranians are bad people. I'm sorry, I don't mean they're bad people. I mean, like, they have allowed themselves to have a bad government that does bad things. And so, like, you know, opposing them is good. I don't mean that supporting the Palestinians is a bad thing. Supporting Palestinian statehood is a fine thing. That's a very nice thing to do. You know, I myself believe the two-state solution is that the two-state solution should be that we grant the Palestinians Gaza as a gift. We don't make them buy it or anything like that. We don't lease it to them. We just give it to them. They get to keep it. They get to have it, you know, gratis, for free. And if we can induce Egypt to sell the Palestinians a little bit of the Sinai Desert that parallels the Gaza Strips, they have a little more land, good, you know? The Palestinians don't get the West Bank because, they don't have enough money and they don't have enough guns. Sorry. You know, it's just how it goes. You know, they don't have enough power to fucking get the West Bank. And it also is, like, geographically hard to imagine how they would get the West Bank and the Gaza Strip as one country. It's not geographically sensical. So, you know, given that they can get one or the other, give them the Gaza Strip. The Jews get the West Bank, you know. That's my two-state solution. Like, do that. And then we can stop fucking talking about it. And fair has nothing to do with it. You know, I do believe in the right of peoples to have self-determination. So give the Palestinians the Gaza Strip and then just see what happens, you know? See what type of government they make for themselves in there. And, like, you know, recognize it as a nation and just fucking fuck it. There you go. It's the nation of Palestine. I mean, that's what I would do. I would do it today. I would do it right now. If I were Joe Biden, I would just go on TV right now and be like, I recognize the Gaza Strip as the nation of Palestine. Done. Last week, there was a resolution to induct the Palestinians into the United Nations. Now, the second word of the UN is nations, and the Palestinians aren't one. So the resolution failed, thanks to an American veto, which is good. You know, I will support recognizing the Palestinians in the UN as soon as they have a country. I'll be the first one to support it. And, like, that's it. I don't know of another way to look at it. I know there's a mindset that's like, you know, like really into underdogs, and like, I guess they view Israel as an oppressor or whatever. The fuck you talking about? Like, I mean, Israel is an oppressive power. But you know,
It had to fight for its existence. It's like a country that came out of the Holocaust and then fought three wars just to stay alive. Like, the Iranians want to kill every fucking Jew they can, you know. If Hamas had the power to just, like, destroy Israel with the snap of its fingers, they would. And, you know, I mean, people talk about genocide. If Israel wanted to level the Gaza Strip and turn it into a parking lot, it could. They could kill everybody there. They're not doing it. So, you know, you got to look at things in the context of the area. It's like, I don't, part of what bothers me about this is like, so I've just stated my opinion at length. And I find my opinion to be perfectly reasonable and the only opinion that makes any sense. Given the values that I hold, like I support democracy, I support human rights and all that shit. So like I back who I back. And, part of what bothers me is the other side seems to be unreasonable. It's like, what do they expect Israel to do and why? It's like, Israel's going to do what every other nation does, which is get as much as it can get and like protect its own interests rabidly. That's what nations do. And like, you know, weak nations go under. And like, you know, if you think that's no longer true, you're wrong. Like, you are suffering a misconception. The world basically works the same way it did in 1800. In the sense that, like, look, so if you look at the war in Ukraine, which is a really clear-cut example of good versus evil, like, the Russians are just swallowing Ukraine. They're launching an invasion of Ukraine. They want to eat it up and swallow it, and they want to turn it into Russia. That's what they're doing. Now, most of the Western world vehemently opposes that happening. So the United States and the Europeans and the Canadians and our Asian allies to a lesser but still significant extent have supported the Ukrainians with money and material and economic sanctions against the Russians. But go look around the world. The South Americans and the Central Americans don't give a fuck. They haven't supported Ukraine. The Africans don't give a fuck. They haven't supported Ukraine. India doesn't care. You know, they haven't supported Ukraine. The Chinese don't give a shit. The Chinese are supporting Russia. The Iranians don't care. They're supporting Russia. The North Koreans don't care. They're supporting Russia too. So, like, we in the West have an idea of how we wish the world was, but it isn't that way. It still works the other way. That's why we're sending all the fucking guns. So I got a buddy who I like to talk politics with. And whenever we talk politics, he points out to me that I get real pissy about these pro-Palestinian protesters. I've tried to present my opinion on this moderately. I don't mean I've tried to moderate my opinion. I mean I've tried to present what I think without making smart remarks and snide comments and sarcastic asides, and I've tried to not be angry as I've talked about this. And if I've failed, you know, keep in mind this is the fourth or fifth time I've tried to do this podcast, so like this is the best it gets probably. And I do get pissed off about these protesters, and it's funny because, you know, you can see that the people who disagree with me also get pissed off at people like me, which is the one sad part about this issue. I'm sad that Israel shit has spiraled out to divide members of Western democracies. But anyway, I get mad because given what I know about the world, a lot of what the protesters seem to want is unreasonable. First of all, I think there's an element of anti-Semitism to the protests. I think a lot of people just don't like the Jews and are saying that. Like from the river to the sea seems like an anti-Semitic chant. It seems to imply that Israel should no longer exist. You know, at Columbia University the other day, they were chanting, like, Jews go back to Poland and stuff, you know, which is the place where they were all killed, by the way. There used to be, like, millions of Jews in Poland, and after Hitler was done, there were, like, 8 of them. Which is the whole point. The Jews had to make their own country because they ran away from the Holocaust. I mean, the Jews had been facing Holocausts and pogroms for 1,500 years. Like, you know, Europe was an anti-Semitic place. I mean, still is, but less than it was, you know. So anyway, like, you know, the Jews made themselves a homeland. Like, it was their previous homeland, but, you know, they got exiled and kicked out of it, and they wandered the world for a while, and then they came back and colonized their old homeland. Like, yes, Israel is a colonizing power. You know, so are we in the United States. So from one colonizing power to another colonizing power, good looks. You know, shout out to Israel. Like, you know, there are plenty of countries that are, like, quote-unquote colonizing powers. It's like Australia, you know, New Zealand, Canada. But I don't just want to limit it to British colonies. I mean, like, the list of countries that technically are colonizing powers by that definition of, like, people from one place went to another place and founded a nation in that place and displaced some people founded a nation is, like, a lot of people. I mean, like, the Norman conquest of England was a semi-colonizing move, you know? So I don't want to get sidetracked here, but there are plenty of colonizing powers. It's like it's a dumb thing to say because it ignores how the world works. So I understand that, or I think I understand it, the biggest thing these protesters want, it seems to me anyway, is for this war between Israel and Hamas to stop. And you know what? As soon as Israel finishes killing all the Hamas members it can find, I would like this war to stop too. I would also not mind if this war stopped today because Israel and Hamas found a way to stop it through a peace treaty or a ceasefire. I understand, I mean, someone correct me if I'm wrong, that one of the things these protesters keep calling for is a ceasefire, but they're calling for it in a funny way. Because they're not calling for a mutual ceasefire, they're calling for Israel to cease fire, and it takes two sides to cease fire. If only one side ceases fire, that's how you get shot. So it's nothing more than silly for people to call on Israel to stop when Hamas won't stop. There have been ceasefire proposals floated by, the negotiators in Qatar, and Hamas has rejected them, like, you know, because Hamas wants the war to continue too. I assume Hamas finds that this war is helping their credibility in the fact that, like, you know, the more bodies that pile up, the more sad outside actors feel for the Palestinians, and the more likely they think that makes a two-state solution. I disagree with the conclusion, but I mean, I think that's the argument. Or, you know, Hamas are just crazy and they want to kill some Jews, and they're doing it. They don't want to cease fire. So, either way. So, I find it weird these protesters are calling for Israel to cease fire. Like, I think it's this weird progressive politics where it's like these people are obsessed with, like, power imbalances and shit. And it's like, listen, you know, to go back to the metaphor about the UFC fighter and the midget, it's like, you know, once you're a midget and you kick a UFC fighter in the balls, you've started a war. And the fact that that guy is stronger than you, it just does not signify at all. You shouldn't have kicked him in the nuts then, you know. That's the end of that, in my opinion. It's like, don't start wars with stronger powers unless you want to get your shit pushed in. That's it. And I mean, I've said already on this show that like, if I was a Palestinian, the appeal of Hamas is pretty clear. Peace got us nothing, so war might. Let's try that. But, so you can say that, like, there are certain people who might say, hey, like, fighting a losing war is better than this. Like, okay, then you're doing that. You're fighting a losing war. Enjoy. I find the protest strange because, I feel like, especially in the United States, but also in the West generally, we're pretty well primed to spot anti-black racism and like racism towards visible minorities. And most people in the West, except for like a couple of outlying racists, are pretty against that type of stuff, you know, anti-Asian hate or like anti-black racism or like, you know, anti-gay hatred, you know, of visibly out gay people, for example. You know, that type of stuff we're against. We've been against it for a long time, and like there's a strong movement against that stuff. You know, Black Lives Matter, all that shit. So the thing is, though, I think the Jews are in a weird area where I don't think there's as much pushback against anti-Semitism as there is against other racism. And that's what I meant before. If I already said, I think the protests are a little anti-Semitic. I do not mean that every protester hates the Jews. No way. I just think there are some of them that do. There's an element that do. Just like how I don't think every Trump voter is a racist, but there's an element of in that coalition of Trump voters that are racists. That's why they're voting for Trump. It's the same shit here. It's like some people are like, oh, good, you know, what a perfect opportunity to fucking publicly hate on the Jews, you know, and they join those protests. You know, and I don't like that. But so anyway, so these people are calling for a ceasefire. They're calling for the war to stop. Like, I would like the war to stop, too, just as soon as Israel finishes trying to kill Hamas. They seem to be upset that the United States is providing Israel with military aid every year. Well, you know, I got news for you, ladies and gentlemen. Like, if we stopped doing that, Israel would keep doing exactly what it's doing right now. All that would happen is we would save $3 billion a year, which, you know, that'd be good. It'd be good to save some money. But, like, we don't control Israel. We provide Israel aid because it's an ally of ours against people we don't like and because it represents our values, you know. Our values being, like, liberal democracy and human rights and, like, you know, standard Western values. I shouldn't have to list them all. Like, Israel is an outlier in the Middle East, which is a fucked up place. If you want to apply, like, a progressive lens to the area. It's like Israel is clearly and by far the most progressive country in the Middle East. It's not just head and shoulders above its neighbors. It's a whole damn body above them. Like gay rights, women's rights, you know, the rights of minorities, like the right to practice a religion that's not Judaism, like is far more well protected in Israel than it is in the Muslim countries that surround it. Like, I feel like I'm stating very obvious things here. It's like, yes, I understand that, like, the UAE has nice buildings and cool zoos and stuff and, like, funny little waterfalls that go down glass, you know, I don't know, whatever technological shit they've spent their money on. I know that. I'm sure it's fun to vacation in Qatar. And like, yeah, Saudi Arabia is like, spending a lot of money on being, like, a up-and-coming regional power, yes. All these things are true. But women's rights in these places are horrible. There is no democracy in these areas. Like, these places do not represent Western values. Israel does. It's why I like them so much. It's a lot of the reason why I back them in their current struggles. And, like, so the protesters seem to be sticking their dicks out for the Palestinians when I don't know what the Palestinians represent that we like. It's like Queers for Palestine. It's like, yo, go be gay in Palestine. Go be openly homosexual in Palestine. See how long you fucking last. They're going to throw you off a goddamn roof, you know. And it bothers me. It bothers me. The Palestinians just don't seem to represent values I believe in. And I mean, I don't, you know, in previous versions of this show, I called the protesters' position and demands unreasonable. And I retract that. I don't like that characterization. I'm going to replace the word unreasonable with vastly unrealistic. Like, the United States could withdraw all support from Israel today, and that war would still continue. Except that Israel would then probably be at war with Iran, you know. So we would have withdrawn support from an ally for no reason whatsoever and empowered an enemy, again, for no reason. Like, because even if all that happened, the Palestinians still wouldn't get a country. And just the war that you don't like still wouldn't stop. And so I get pissy about it. You know, look around. It's like, right now, Iran is an ally of the government of Gaza. Iran supplies Hamas with weapons and backs Hamas in public. You know, so the enemy of my enemy is my friend. It's another reason I like Israel. You know, you people who keep calling Joe Biden, who is, by the way, the best president that this country has had probably since Lyndon Johnson in the 1960s or George Bush Sr. in 1988, Genocide Joe. It's like, the other thing that bothers me is Israel's not committing a genocide. The definition of a genocide, according to the United Nations, is that, like, you are deliberately killing members of an ethnic group in whole or in part because you don't like them, you know, because of their membership in that ethnic group. So, you know, if you are a black person and you are walking out of a gas station after having used an ATM and you have money in your hand and a white guy runs up to you with a gun and tries to rob you and you pull your own gun out and blow his head off, you're not committing genocide against white people because you've killed a white person. You know, if you are a black guy and you walk out of a gas station and you see a white guy and yell, "Fuck you, honky, one less of you," and then you blow him away, yeah, like, that's an act of genocide. So the fact that Israel is at war with Hamas and that there are civilian casualties of the so-called Palestinian ethnicity that's not a genocide. That's civilian casualties in a war. It should be a very easy difference to grasp. We weren't genociding the Japanese when we nuked Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We were at war with the people of Japan, and we killed some of them. That's not the same thing as a genocide. A genocide would have been if after the war we'd put them in concentration camps and then gassed them to death. You know, so that bothers me too. It's like they keep yelling genocide and there is no genocide. I know you're upset that there are civilian casualties in war. War sucks. I agree with you. You know, and then, like, I guess these protesters also want a two-state solution. And as I've already said today, I'm not against that. To be clear about my position, I'm not, like, eager for it. I'm not eager for it either. I don't really see that it makes much of a difference to the United States or the world. I kind of think it would be a little worse to have a Palestinian country than not. But competing with that feeling is the feeling that, like, oh, you know, everybody else has a country, so the Palestinians sort of deserve one too. So let's give them the Gaza Strip and call it a day, if we can get Israel to agree to that, which is harder now than it was a year ago, probably. The thing about it is that okay, you want a two-state solution, and I hear this all the time. It's like, well, both sides need to sit down and negotiate. Israel and the Palestinians need to negotiate. Israel needs to negotiate. I hear that more than the Palestinians need to negotiate. But both sides, I hear. Sit down, I hear. Negotiate, I hear. And then I think to myself, but what on earth do the Palestinians have to negotiate with? What do they have to offer Israel that Israel wants? Because that's what a negotiation is, as far as I understand it. A negotiation is this. And this applies not only to the current war happening now, but also like the Israel-Palestine situation in general. And, you know, all wars and situations like this. So it's like two parties are at war or otherwise in a major conflict. And both parties want it to stop. Both parties want peace because they are tired of war. War is costing them too much blood and too much money and too much resources. So they say, hey, fuck this war. Let's go sit down with those people we hate and try to negotiate our way out of this. And in a situation like that, both parties have things to bring to the table, which is why they call it a negotiation. You know, and so I look at this and it's like, I don't see what the Palestinians bring to the table in a negotiation. I don't see what they have to negotiate with. Hamas just spent 2 years planning this Viking-style raid into Israel, where they slaughtered random innocent people and dragged hostages back to Gaza. And look what's happened since then. They've gotten fucked up. They've started a war they cannot win and are very badly losing. And so violence doesn't seem to be a negotiating tactic. What are they going to say at the negotiating table? Hey, if you don't give us a country, we're going to kill 1,200 more of your people to give you another reason to fuck us up even more. You know, I don't understand that. And so it's not enough to say, I want a two-state solution with the Israel-Gaza situation or with the Israel-Palestine situation. That's just a want. It's like you need to say, I want a two-state solution, and here is how we're going to get it.
As
the United States, yeah, we can kind of pressure Israel. We can threaten to withdraw support from Israel, and we could actually withdraw support. But all that does is send a signal to our enemies that we are an inconstant ally. You know, and look, one of the reasons that we're allied with Israel is because Iran is Israel's enemy and the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And many of Israel's neighbors who don't really like the Jews also ally with Israel, both because Israel is useful to them. Israel has a strong economy. Israel has a strong intelligence apparatus. Israel has a strong military, and not just because we've built it. Israel built their own military themselves to be strong too. So Israel is a useful ally to its neighbors, even though its neighbors don't really like it that much. So the longer Israel exists, the more its neighbors say, hey, you know, this country's not going anywhere. We'll ally with it. So last week when Iran launched a huge attack on Israel, many of Israel's allies, both in the region and around the world, helped Israel stop that attack. Jordan, for example, shot down missiles over its airspace. Because these countries don't like Iran. So you protesters who seem to be shitting all over Israel seem to expect that we're going to withdraw support from an ally at a time when this big dick swinging global competition between authoritarianism and democracy is heating up. I don't understand that. How come you guys aren't yelling at Hamas to, like, who started this war in the first place? At least this phase of it, I understand that this has been going on for 60 years, you know, but, like, I don't hear a lot of fucking yelling about the dead civilians that Hamas caused when they ran into Israel. But somehow it's like real fucked up that Israel's killing civilians as it's literally trying to destroy military targets, which is not what Hamas ever tried to do. Hamas didn't go find the biggest chunk of the Israeli army it could and fight a stand-up battle with that, you know. So... that's where I'm at. It's like I don't see what the... I still don't see exactly what these protesters want. Like, okay, no more dead Palestinians? Yeah. Like, you think I'm sitting here cheering every time a baby dies? No, I'm not. It's sad. But it's the cost of doing business. That's what happens when war happens. It's like these people seem to not, grasp how the world works. like they live in some world made by the Walt Disney Company. I don't say that to be a jerk about it. I just, it's like, you know, a good protest has a goal that can actually be accomplished. Like, you know, you scream about it loud enough and people are finally sick of hearing it, so they do the thing you want. Like, hey, you know, too many people have been hit on this highway. We want a traffic light here, so we're going to block the highway with our bodies until the government finally puts a traffic light here. Eventually, like, you know, the government says, fuck it, like, this protest is loud and it's gaining popular support, so we're putting a traffic light in the highway. Okay, I understand that. I get that. I don't know what the version of the traffic light for these protesters is. And I don't know, I also don't know how they think they're going to get it. You know, what are you going to go turn around and vote for Donald Trump? You know, thinking that he's going to do what Joe Biden won't do? Hell no. You know, Trump would fucking say, let me do you a favor. And he would like, you know, drop a tactical nuclear weapon on the Gaza Strip and say, I solved your problem for you. You know, there you go. So it's like Joe Biden is at least saying that civilian casualties should be lower. And American pressure has kept them from being higher. And that's good. You know, we should pressure Israel to do a little bit to lower civilian casualties because, like, who else will that they'll listen to? But that's not the same thing as telling Israel not to prosecute a war that I feel like it's perfectly reasonable that it fights. And I guess, like, you know, I suppose I have not made the pro-Palestinian case as strongly as it could be made. But I feel like around me, all I hear is pro-Palestinian commentary, which is part of the reason I wanted to do this. I hope that I've made my case in a reasonable way, although I have no clue whether I have or not. But I know that 4 or 5 times of doing it is enough. I've deleted 4 episodes halfway through because I felt like I was getting too pissed off and not making an argument. I was just yelling. Hopefully I haven't done that this time. I think we've hit the end here. I'm not, like, wild about how I did today. But, you know, if I don't put this up, I just imagine myself in a Groundhog Day loop of me being like, well, you know, I know this war has been over for 6 years, but, like, I gotta fucking nail down this Israel-Palestine episode, and, like, it's the 600th time I've tried, so, you know what, I'm done. You know, if you made it this far, thanks so much for listening, and, if you've made it this far and don't agree with me and feel like you are on the other side of this argument, well, thank you even more for listening then. You know, I know it's hard to listen to people you disagree with for more than 5 minutes. I find it difficult myself sometimes, especially on issues that are really hot button or really polarizing. So anyway, thanks everybody, and I'll catch you all next time. This has been The Blind Spot, and I've been your host, Jason Pulaski. Pleasure to be here. Peace, bitches.